Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, what a great day. A little gloomy, but a good day. It's Tuesday, and lots of things are going on, kind of, sort of. A lot of the same old thing, but it's all how you view it. And we're going to go to gold pricing right now, this very moment. And, you know, gold struggled all day, but we still had a nice day. New York spot price aftermarket, we're looking at $1,733, up a buck. Silver was up down 32 cents at 26.02. So it's still holding that $26 level. Platinum unchanged, 12.19. Palladium up 96 bucks. How about that? Over 4%, 2,550. I guess the old industrial metals, the platinum and rhodium are getting all excited with all this stimulus money that'll be coming into the into our infrastructure spending in the near future. So things are getting a little exciting there. So who knows? But that's if any of it goes. They'll pass a $2 trillion, $3 trillion an infrastructure bill. But gee, how much of that is going to go to infrastructure? Kind of like our stimulus bill. Oh, it's for the people. And how much of it that goes to the people? Not a whole lot. And it's all their little pet projects and everything else. So I can't imagine that the infrastructure bill would be much different. But anyway, the USDX today was at 0.05 at 91.84. Crude oil was down 69.69 at 64.70. Didn't follow the markets today except gold. So let's see what the paper ones did. Not too bad. I've seen some reversals on the Dow. I think it was down triple digits, but we're looking right now, before it changes here in a couple seconds, down 62 at 32,890. NASDAQ was up 11 points at 13,471. The S&P was up 2.81, and you know what, Dave? I think they wait and listen, because every time I give those numbers, they change it. So I think they just wait and they're listening to when I'm ready to hit the paper markets, and then they change it. So the Dow was down 128, 32,824. The S&P was down 6 at 39.62. 10-year yield, that's good, 1.62%, up 0.02. Paper markets in Asia and Europe, they were up a little bit, nothing to write home about. And, it's pretty much the same. Not a lot of earth-shaking news that's going on. And it was just a day of boring news, I think. But I guess we can start with, one of the boring numbers, boring articles. No, it's exciting. Retail sales fall more than expected. Well, Melody, how can you say that that's exciting? Well, you know what? It's probably a little more about reality, because they fell more than expected. And, of course, they're going to blame the bitterly cold weather across the country. And they always blame the weather if they get numbers that they don't approve of or, they don't go along with the program. Retail sales dropped by a seasonally adjusted 3.0% last month. This all comes from the Commerce Department. And that's a big drop, a 3.0. And everyone was expecting a drop of 0.5. Data for January was revised up, and again, the cold weather. The decline in sales last month also reflected the fading boost from the one-time $600 checks to households, which were part of the nearly $900 billion in stimulus approved in Congress in late December. So all the hoopla over January was all based on the $600 checks. So I guess next month we'll have a lot of hoopla based on retail sales because now people are getting a whole lot more. And, you know, it's just really amazing. If you exclude the automobiles, gasoline, building materials, and food services, retail sales decreased 3.5% last month. And the so-called core retail sales correspond most closely with the consumer spending component of the GDP. So,
well, you know, still last month's drop in core retail sales left the bulk of January's gain intact, although we believe we need another 6 months or so, as Melody mentioned, next month could be skewed, depending on when stimulus checks go out. But certainly by April, we'll be into nicer weather. Vaccinations will be farther along the continuum. So I think we'll have a clearer picture by maybe the middle or the end of springtime as to, you know, how retail sales really are. I you know, on the one hand, in a world of even just 10 years ago, I could see, you know, this last month's ice cold weather and unprecedented snow and ice storms in Texas, for example, as affecting retail sales. But now with so much having changed over the past year, to online sales, it just seems that there are factors other than the weather accounting for this drop in sales, like perhaps the level of ongoing joblessness.
Figure.
Yeah, who are we? Households have accumulated $1.8 trillion in excess savings, perhaps another reason why sales are off. People just aren't spending what they're getting these days, but it looks as though most of that is skewed toward the top of the income level, which we'll talk about more in today's third segment, Melody.
Well, you know, home builder confidence, that's falling as we see prices continue to rise, especially for lumber. And the National Association of Home Builders market, that index fell 2 points to 82. And anything above 50 is considered positive sentiment. So confidence is still high. The index stood at 72 in March of 2020 and hit a high of 90 in November. The Chuck Falk, NAHB chairman, said that he noted that supply shortages and high demand have caused lumber prices to jump 200% since last April. We've been talking about that on this program several times. Of the index's three components, current sales conditions fell 3 points to 87. Sales expectations in the next 6 months increased 3 points, and buyer traffic was unchanged at 72. So, you know, these high costs for builders, you know, Dave, you know, all these costs are going, as we talked yesterday, who do you think you're going to pass these higher costs to? And that is the consumer.
Well, the median price of a newly built home is up more than 5% year over year. Well, as of the end of January, NAHB's chief economist Bob Dietz says that while single-family home building should grow this year, the elevated price of lumber is adding $24,000 to the price of a new home on average. That's a big chunk. I mean, if you consider what the average price of a new home is, 300 some thousand, that's, 7%, roughly, 7-8%. That's a big cost factor there. And of course, mortgage interest rates are up about 30 basis points over the last month as well. Now, these rising costs are particularly hard on first-time home buyers, as the supply on the lower end of the market is the leanest. Also, any increase in mortgage rates tends to knock buyers out of the market, not just because monthly payments are higher, but because in today's tighter lending climate, they no longer qualify for a mortgage loan. So, you know, regionally, the West is still in the lead. Although sentiment, the home builder sentiment did fall 3 points there, but it's still 90, where it's highest in the country.
Wow. You know, this is kind of interesting. This is the respondents to a Bank of America fund manager survey, which is to say mainly big Wall Street companies said the market faces bigger worries. I guess, you know, what they're talking about is in a tale of market expectations, wagging the tail of these self-fulfilling prophecies, inflation now has become the biggest tail risk that could cause the most damage. And a total of 37% of respondents in March survey cited that as the biggest challenge, followed by 35% for taper tantrums. I just kind of cracked up at that one. Tantrums are sharp reactions in the bond market when the Fed unexpectedly pulls back on its monthly asset purchases. There's a total of 220 investors with $630 billion in assets under management participated in this bank survey. And this was all conducted last week. And now, though the pandemic, specifically problems, you know, with the vaccine rollout remains the third biggest threat, it was cited by fewer than 15% of respondents, about half of February's level. So this is the first time that, of course, the COVID-related concerns didn't top the survey since February of last year. So those three concerns easily outdistance a bubble on Wall Street, higher taxes, or harsher regulations under the Biden administration. And the shift in priorities come as the U.S. is vaccinating more than, you know, 2 million people a day. And we certainly have seen various things decline.
Yeah, and with most health professionals indicating a return to somewhat, quote, normal life by summer and into the fall, investors are beginning to follow or to shift their priorities accordingly. Inflation has come into view this year as government bond yields have spiked. They are up over a percentage point to pre-pandemic levels, and even that's the mainly the 10-year yield. An even better market indicator, the break-even rate between 5-year treasuries and inflation index bonds has jumped to its highest level in almost 13 years. Survey respondents said a move to the 2% level in the 10-year treasury note could cause a stock market correction or more than a 10% drop. A jump to 2.5%, they say, would make bonds more attractive than equities. Once again, these mainstreamers, Melody, just forgetting about those lovely stacks of coins made of gold and silver that they sweep under the rug and want us to forget all about. But we know you don't forget about them, ladies and gentlemen, and they're forefront in your portfolio and thus your life. Now, though the markets have been volatile during the run-up in yields, gold included, major averages on the equity side have scaled to near record territory. Investors, however, are making adjustments to their portfolios, we read. For example, managers have cut allocations to tech stocks to their lowest overall level since 2009. The survey also found a pronounced shift in commodities to an all-time high. Managers, now that didn't break that category down. So I'm not sure where the precious metals fall into that category, although we're reading separately the World Gold Council, that certainly they were gold holdings were at their highest levels at the end of 2020. So see what happens. Stay tuned.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think I shared this on the program yesterday, or that speaking to someone over this weekend, they were going to put money into gold, but they decided to talk to their financial planner. And of course they said, no, you don't want to do that. And it's like, it really is sad. And I understand it. I mean, that's what they sell. They get paid on the fees or the amount of money that they hold. I get all that. They're instructed by their bosses. Most financial planners are instructed by the higher ups, what to sell, when to buy, and so forth. And, you know, they have these set, I mean, the whole industry has this set, lead that they follow on what to buy and what not to buy and so forth. Might vary, but it's pretty much consistent with, you know, all the financial planners and so forth. And it really is sad that they can't give up a percentage of those funds to truly balance a portfolio. And yes, they might sell them the ETFs, but that's not gold. They might sell them mining shares, but that's not gold. So they might sell them bitcoins, telling them that this is a secure, safe haven. It's being replaced. That's not gold. That's not money. Real money. So, you know, it really is a sad, and I truly believe that they all have great intentions and, you know, they, but yet their hands are tied. They can only do what they're told to do. And that really is that the higher ups won't release a percentage of those funds so people can actually be protected for the difficult times that they discuss, that they admit to higher inflation, that they admit to the bubbles in the stock market, they admit to the bubbles in the bond market, they admit to all the problems where people could lose a large percentage because there's no guarantees. But yet, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Did I get that right, Dave?
And here's Melody.
And just to recap, our producer pulled up some of the intro music to a lot of the old-time TV programs, and we're having fun with them, and I hope you are too. So we're guessing, and everybody's always right on the old ones. You might miss one or two every now and then. But I knew that. I really like that intro for Johnny Carson, though. That's some nice music. But anyway, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give us a call at Discount Gold and Silver. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can listen to these programs live right from the website. Just go to the radio page and click on the bar. You're not going to the bar. You're clicking on the bar. And you will find us live at 4 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to the archives. Just scroll down and go to the date where it says October. I don't even remember where it starts. And to present. And you can go click on that. And there you have it. It's as simple as that. 800-375-4188. Premiums haven't been changing on items. It seems like availability is a little bit easier since the premiums on gold. This is nice. This is a good sign, though. Premiums on Silver Eagles haven't come down, but more people are buying the foreign gold because of the premiums that are so high on the silver. Now, there's a little bit of a delay on the foreign silver. And the gold and the Silver Eagles are live, so there's no delay. So we're seeing that little bit of change. So maybe we might see some premiums drop in Silver Eagles, but they haven't so far. Fingers crossed. But we're approaching that June month where the new ones are coming out. So highly unlikely premiums are going to drop. If they do, not too much. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. U.S. import prices increased strongly in February, boosted by costs for crude oil and commodities. And everyone is expecting further strengthening for acceleration in inflation. That word is popping up everywhere. The Labor Department said this morning that import prices rose 1.3% last month, after jumping 1.4 in January. In the 12 months through February, import prices accelerated 3%. That was the largest gain since March of 2012, and followed a 1% in January. Oil prices have recovered to pre-pandemic levels, and of course, everyone is expecting a pickup of oil with global demand. But we'll have to see. You know, things aren't looking too well in Europe, so we're not quite sure, you know, if they're big enough in order to have any impacts on that, but certainly have the OPEC that are playing with the numbers to keep the prices rising also. So as we see inflation gain steam this year, we'll see what happens with the reopening of our economy, Dave.
Yeah, but many economists believe that excess capacity in the labor market, i.e. massive unemployment, will probably stop price pressures from spiraling out of control. That is sort of a limit in any increases in demand. Now, imported fuel prices jumped over 11% last month after advancing 9% in January. Imported food prices were up 1.6%. Last month, the cost of goods imported from China rose 0.3% after gaining 0.2% the month before. Prices for imported capital goods ticked up just 0.1%. A report also showed export prices rising 1.6% last month after increasing 2.5% in January, although prices for agricultural exports rose just shy of 3%, while non-agricultural stuff increased 1.5%. Now, interesting, finally, export prices jumped 5.2% year-on-year. In February, that's the largest gain since June of 2018.
You know, we're just going to go back. I just want to go back about some additional bond news just for a minute. The Fed's Policymaking Open Market Committee is meeting today and tomorrow. And some are pointing to the spread between the U.S. and German 10-year government bond yields widening today to its steepest level since January of last year, as evidence the Fed made tweaks on policy statements. And that was, of course, when we entered into a recession last year also, but no word on that anymore. But so this growing gap comes as the European yields tumbled following their central bank's announcement last week that it's going to speed up at their pace of bond buying. So the ECB became the first major central bank to announce an increase in bond buying to stem these higher yields, Dave.
Well, in contrast, the Fed to date, including their chair, have signaled they have no intention of taking action on rising rates in the immediate future. Proof will be in the press conference tomorrow. The 10-year Treasury yield spread with the German 10-year ended last year at 146 basis points and has already widened by another 50 basis points the first 2.5 months this year. The spread on 30-year government debt has also widened to its steepest level since early November 2019, and even the 2-year spread has grown wider this year. So it'll be interesting. Everyone is betting that the Fed takes no action on rates tomorrow, with maybe some language clarifying whether they're sticking to their guns for more of an indefinite hold on rates to see what inflation does.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, they're not going to raise rates, but yet there's people who think that they're going to. And, I mean, so.
Some, not many.
No, I mean, they're not going to be able to raise rates till Lord knows when. They'll never be able to raise rates again, ever. I guess markets can force them up, but money markets have been moving toward pricing in the beginning of the Fed tightening by the end of next year. At the same time, the euro dollar contracts reflect a full quarter point hike coming around March of 2023. A 75% chance of a rate hike by December of 2022. The rising expectation for a move from the Fed is even creeping into the Fed fund futures contracts this year, Dave.
Yeah, data from CME Group's FedWatch tool show investors are pricing in a 10% chance of a rate hike by this September, which I think is high. I don't know how exactly to characterize that, foolhardy. only a 0.3% chance of 2 hikes. Even that's high in my humble opinion. David Robin of TJM Institutional Securities says the market has no patience for the Fed. For the Fed being patient. He believes if Powell pushes back on current pricing at tomorrow's press conference, the markets will likely think he's in denial and therefore accelerate the timing and the magnitude of the Fed's first rate increase. Now, this press conference scheduled for 2 p.m., 2:30, excuse me, after the Fed's action announcement at 2 o'clock. As the illustrious Austin Powers would say to investors, Melody, in this case, oh, behave, people, just behave.
Okay, we will. Okay. You know, I don't know. I'm glad you brought this up because we forget, you know, we talk about these stories and then, you know, there's so much going on. And when we're guilty, we forget to follow up and so forth. And Goldman Sachs, it was just less than 5 months ago, Goldman Sachs and its Malaysian subsidiary were criminally charged by the U.S. Department of Justice. The charges pointed to a sweeping international corruption scheme, conspiring to avail itself of more than $1.6 billion in bribes to multiple high-level government officials across several countries, so that the company could reap hundreds of millions of dollars in fees. The case has become infamously known as the 1MDB, the 1MDB scandal, named after the Malaysian sovereign wealth fund that was ripped off. And you had Goldman Sachs admitted to the charges, paid a criminal penalty of over $2.9 billion to settle the charges. Wouldn't that be nice? You're criminally charged and you can just pay a fine and settle the charges against you. You can go out and murder somebody and say, hey, here's a couple million dollars. Are we good? Are we good? Although that's probably really happening in today's world. But that sum was on top of the $2.5 billion in cash it paid to settle with the government of Malaysia. It stripped shareholders of $5.4 billion of their capital for criminal conduct in the midst of the worst pandemic in a century, might have humbled a lesser institution, encouraged its chair and CEO David Solomon to stay out of the spotlight. But unfortunately for Solomon, Goldman Sachs has come into the crosshairs of Senator Sherrod Brown, chair of the Senate Banking Committee, and of course, his colleague is Elizabeth Warren. So I'm not sure if this is heading into a good story or not, but the senator sent Solomon a letter last Friday demanding answers to a series of questions surrounding Goldman's decision to take advantage of a temporary weakened capital requirement by federal regulators that was sold to the public as allowing banks to continue to make loans to businesses during the pandemic without being hamstrung by capital restraints. They wanted to know, among numerous other concerns, if Goldman had received a waiver from regulators to continue its dividend distributions to shareholders. In other words, depleting its capital throughout the pandemic while also having itself the weakened capital rule. So, well, I don't know, Dave. Is this criminal or what?
You know,
more criminal?
I mean, it's... You ask if it's leading into a good story. Well... It's an important story. Hopefully it has a decent ending, unlike how it was during the Great Recession. I mean, Goldman paid $1.25 per share as a cash dividend each quarter throughout 2020. Its next declared dividend payment in the same amount is scheduled for this March 30th. According to Goldman's most recent SEC filing, it had over 345 million common shares outstanding as of February. So using quarterly dividends of $1.25 per share, by March 30th of this year, it will have paid out approximately $2.16 billion in cash to shareholders since its March 30th dividend payment in 2020. Add that 2.16 to the 5.4 that Goldman paid to the U.S. and Malaysia to settle claims related to the bribery scandal, and we reach a sum of $7.6 billion that's gone poof from Goldman's capital since last March. And then there's Goldman's planned buyback of almost $2 billion of its stock. in the first quarter this year. According to Brown and Warren's letters, they're singling out Goldman for this reason. To our knowledge, and this is a quote, Goldman Bank is the only depository institution in the U.S. that opted into these weakened capital requirements, whose holding company continues to reduce its capital by paying dividends. And now, of course, by buying back its stock. But look, as Pam and Russ Martins of Wall Street on Parade point out, Citigroup and J.P. Morgan Chase also took advantage of the weakened rule and continued to pay out their regular cash dividends throughout 2020. Here's the real problem, though. As of September 30th last year, almost 13 years and two financial crises later, the federally insured banking units of Goldman, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Citibank held face amounts of derivatives averaging an astounding $46 trillion per institution. $46 trillion with a T. That's a screaming red flag. Goldman's federally insured bank's credit exposure compared to its capital is at 300%. J.P. Morgan's at 168 and Citibank's at 135. That doesn't bode well for shareholders and taxpayers alike. And it's highly likely that it's the counterparties on the other side of those derivative trades that are concerning the senators. All of them, all of those counterparties are too big to fail U.S. banks, the same characters that brought our economy and us taxpayers to our knees once before, just 13 short years ago. I don't know, Melody, is past prologue? It's looking more and more like it is. That's the crux of this story.
Yeah, and you know what? They just continue to get away with it because they'll just pay fines until it actually comes to the, until it happens again, like you said. And so how do you solve the problem?
Jail.
Yes.
Jail, bus, right. Break up the banks. That's really the long-term solution is breaking up the banks. Yes. Whether you bring back Glass-Steagall or something like it, call it by whatever name, the branch businesses have to be separate from these risk-taking ventures.
We're heading into break. Stay tuned. We'll finish that up when we get back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Dave, name that tune.
Man. I'm sorry. I'm stumped. I recognize the tune. I just can't place it.
Is that Welcome Back, Cotter? No.
Nope.
It's Barney Miller. I saw the cops, but I couldn't think of Barney Miller. I saw Barney. The cops. And that was my next question. I thought that's what it was. I like Barney Miller. That was a good program. Couldn't be on in today's world. It was a good show.
I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
Kick it, party.
But you know, headed into the break, we were talking about Goldman Sachs and the too big to fail banks and breaking them up as a solution and sending them to jail. And I agree with that. There has to be accountability, and that's the problem. Everybody getting that because there's so much corruption in the system. And that's because why wouldn't there be corruption when no one is ever held accountable? But can we really break up the banks in the condition of this, how our financial system really is in today's world? Because these banks do control and they do keep the systems going. And I don't think you couldn't break. The only way they're going to be broken up is after a collapse, in my view.
Well,
they're just too tied to, you know, when they've done the working group of, you know, financial markets and, you know, they're in control of that and everything else. It's, you can't break them up.
Sure. And in reality, that's how it will likely play out. But I think the worst thing that can happen is that they aren't broken up and that they're allowed to continue.
They're allowed to continue
as currently structured. But I think it can be done. And I don't think it spells the end of the world if they are. It's strictly delineating a line in the sand that the investment banking side of a mega bank has its own corporate structure and its own balance sheet. The institutional, the retail banking, the lending side of that same bank is broken up and has a separate, its own board of directors and governance structure. And I hate to say this, with Fed and Office of the Comptroller of the Currency oversight, and certainly with self-interested, with an ethical oversight of Congress as well, I think it can be done in a way that doesn't harm the economy. Now, there may be some fallout, as there should be, to some of the individual, the newly reorganized institutions, and that's okay. That's what should happen in an economy such as ours. There are always winners and losers. I just feel that the current structure invites another catastrophe like the Great Recession, only this time it's worse because it appears we haven't learned our lessons.
We have. They haven't.
This is true.
And, yeah, well, that would be great. But you know what? But when you think that, when you look at our currency, it's all based on confidence.
Yeah.
You know, really, that's, so when you start breaking up the banks, I think that would put a huge whammy on that level. And, you know, maybe that will be the direction, and that would even probably benefit China to some degree. So,
yeah.
So.
Well, that would certainly be the scare tactic, the spin.
And I agree, it has to be, something has to be done, but, you know, like you said, in reality. But
yeah, I agree with you.
This is interesting, before we continue to move on, that the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un sent an eerie message to the U.S. today. There's this administration's officials have arrived for high-level talks in Japan and South Korea, and referring to joint U.S. and South Korean military exercises in the region, Kim Yo-jong said, "We take this opportunity to warn the new U.S. administration trying hard to give off gunpowder smell in our land." Say what?
Yeah, right.
Say what?
Okay.
If the U.S. wants to sleep in peace for coming 4 years, it had better refrain from causing a stink at its first step. That's what she said?
That was reported in one of their papers.
And you know where their information comes from. Her comments, carried by the state-run Korean Central News Agency, are the first reactions from Pyongyang since Biden took office. They coincided with the Secretary of State and Defense Secretary in the region. So the plans are trying to reaffirm the U.S. commitments in the region and discuss ongoing security challenges, including North Korea. So, yeah, it looks like, you know, they just can't leave North Korea alone, you know. And I don't know, Dave, it kind of seems North Korea behaves when you leave them alone.
Well, interesting. Reportedly, someone in the Biden administration reached out to North Korea privately since the new administration has taken office, and just their the travel to Japan and South Korea are just ramping up, I guess, this opportunity to, I think, just come back on the record and just maybe make the first public volley. And I'm sure it's all toward, you know, saving a face for Kim Jong-un, that particularly if arrangements are made for new talks, you know, Kim can always point back to these comments of his sister, saying, you know, see, we throw out some words of strength and the U.S. comes to the table, and you know, hopefully the U.S. is our diplomats are big enough that, you know, we don't have to you know, respond in kind, that you know, let's keep our eyes on the end game here to denuclearize North Korea. But yeah, interesting timing.
Yeah. Well, you know, our newsletter came out, and Dave, you wrote about how the wealthiest Americans are hoarding cash and how that's impacting the economy, and I believe not for the good.
Well, it's true. You know, when we think of the wealthiest Americans, Melody, the word hoarders doesn't usually come to mind. But recent studies suggest that's just what they are and have been doing for decades. Americans, especially wealthy individuals and big businesses, have been stashing greater shares of their money. And that phenomenon has major implications for an already anemic economy that's built on consumer, commercial, and yes, governmental spending. And if this savings trend persists, particularly with the historically low interest rates, then low economic growth and unprecedented economic inequality will likely continue and worsen.
Wow. That is really kind of, you say that thanks to the pandemic, Americans at many income levels have been socking away more of their money.
Well, it's true. A recent survey from Pew found that U.S. households have cut back on spending over the past years. That's especially so at the upper income levels. But while almost a third of upper income adults, 32%, said they were saving more since the pandemic began, just a quarter, a little less, 23%, and 17%, that's a quarter of all respondents, and 17% of lower income adults were saving more. So on the one hand, less spending isn't surprising, given nationwide shutdown since last March, the corresponding trend toward working from home, and a widespread fear of catching COVID in general. On the other hand, as a direct result of that frugality, GDP cratered during a good part of 2020, with severe consequences for jobs, business investment, and government revenues used to provide services.
Is it true, Dave, you pointed out that Americans have stockpiled $1.5 trillion in excess savings? I mean, that's kind of hard to believe.
Yeah, it's one study by the Albion Financial Group, but a similar report from Oxford Economics and Barclays found $1.8 trillion in additional savings over the last, slightly less than a year, which could rise to as high as $2.5 trillion by this summer, thanks largely to the just-passed American Rescue Plan, if, as expected, a lot of the upper-income recipients of the direct checks continue to save that. Really, what really got my attention, Melody, is another paper. It's called The Saving Glut of the Rich. It's a study written by three academics and just published by the National Bureau of Economic Research. And as the title suggests, the study found that the wealthiest Americans have increasingly hoarded their money over the past 40 years. At the same time, net investment has decreased, while middle and working class people have had to increase their debt loads, along with virtually, I think, all levels of government. This study observes that the rise in savings among the top 1% hasn't been accompanied by a rise in net domestic investment. And that's significant because, among other things, it runs counter to a major argument touted by those who support tax cuts for corporations and the rich, namely that such cuts and the resulting increase in disposable income will lead to more investment, among other things. Instead, the authors of this study say the additional savings have been absorbed in a less conventional manner through what they call dissavings by the government and the rest of the U.S. household sector, i.e. the middle class and working poor. In particular, they found that savings by the bottom 90% have fallen significantly since the early 1980s, especially after the Great Recession.
Well, the cash hoarding also is happening at large U.S. companies, as you write, have benefited from cheap debt since the Fed has ramped up its QE bond buying since last March. And, they've kept much of it in cash reserves.
No, that's a good point, Melody. I mean, in the first half of 2020, cash holdings among S&P 500 companies rose to a record $1.9 trillion, while cash investments held by non-financial companies rose 30% to a record $2.5 trillion. What's that? $4.4 trillion total. That's on top of the individual savings. That's a lot of cash. The cash ratio, which compares companies' cash against current liabilities, was 34% in the third quarter. That's up 15 percentage points from 19% just a year prior. It's according to S&P Global. For junk-rated companies, cash ratios have more than doubled in a year, to slightly over 50% from the third quarter, in the third quarter from the same time in 2019. Now, one of the takeaways from these analyses Melody, is that the 2017 tax cuts, among other things, did little to spur economic growth and start to reverse wealth inequality. It did, however, spur increased savings among all classes of Americans, but especially among the richest of Americans. Some economists are saying now these recent trends suggest that everyday Americans should support increasing taxes on the top 5 or 10% of earners to help pay for some new programs like infrastructure moving forward. It's certainly going to be a big debate, and as it should be, where the wealthy could simply cash in some of their savings windfall to pay an extra share. Better yet, though, my humble opinion, use this extra tax revenue to create a national rainy day fund to use for, yes, future debt reduction. Well, when the experts tell us it's time to start. Hey, come on, you can't fault a guy for trying.
Can I chuckle?
Please do. Please do. It's best to laugh at ourselves.
Well, it looks like we're just about out of time, and I just want to read this headline where Russia partners with China for a moon mission. So, they're getting buddy-buddy, and we're out of time. So, buddy, we got to go, and we'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dave.
Work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.